This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey everyone, it's me, Rebecca. I'm currently on maternity leave, and while I'm away, we picked out some of our earlier episodes from the No Limits Vault so that you can get caught up and enjoy while I'm off. And just so you know, I pre-recorded this, so I actually am spending time with my baby right now.
Every time they would call me about it, I'd get this like sharp pain in my stomach and in my chest. And I was like, oh, no, that my soul's saying no. It's saying no. Now, it would have been amazing for us financially, for my work, for whatever, for her to see that mommy does this. But I was like, oh, no, my body's saying no. So I said no. And they're like, you're kidding. And I'm like, I got to hang out with her for the summer. It's too important to me.
From ABC, it's No Limits. I'm Rebecca Jarvis, and each week we're talking to the most bold and influential women playing at the top of their game, trying to demystify success and what it really takes to get there, and all the trade-offs. Whether you're looking for answers or you just want to hear a good story, you're in the right place. On today's episode, Christina Applegate has built a decades-long career in the entertainment industry. She's performed on Broadway, on television, of course on film as well. And it all started out before she could even speak. Really, as a little baby, it started, and she's been working ever since. On this episode, we talk about why she decided to take a step back from the spotlight, what she's learned about herself along the way, and her favorite role yet. Christina Applegate, welcome to No Limits.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm a real fan of you and your work and your story. You started acting so young.
I was.
You were a baby.
Young. I was, well, yes, you can't really call it acting if there's a baby, but yes, I was on camera from the time of, 3 months old until the last couple of years where I've taken time off.
I watched you a lot when I was a kid, Kelly Bundy. I secretly watched you, actually. My parents wouldn't let me watch Married with
hilarious.
Children as a kid, which now seems so quaint.
It's like Silver Spoons, basically, compared to everything else on television.
Exactly.
For sure.
Do you remember, what is your earliest memory of acting?
Gosh, I think my earliest memories were when my mom would put me in the plays that she was in because she couldn't afford a babysitter. So I would end up being in these plays. She was part of this theater group. And those are some of the first memories I have, is being on stage in these little plays.
Did you instantly like it?
I think they lured me onto stage with like M&Ms. So yeah, I just sat there, I think, and ate M&Ms and then said something here and there. But yeah, I did. Then I was in another play, independent of her, later on when I was about 10 years old. And I really loved that.
Your mom is an actor and was a really pivotal part of your life growing up. Did you ever think about any alternative path?
No, I didn't really, because it was such a natural, it was the way life was. I had to go on auditions. I would go to auditions with her on her auditions. I mean, that was just sort of what life was. I remember being 13 and saying, I really don't want to do this anymore. And I had my head was all shaved and I was going through that moment. And I said, I just don't want to do it anymore. I want to be able to hang out with my friends. I don't want to go to auditions after school. And she goes, okay. And I went upstairs and I got really sick to my stomach at the thought of it. And I came down and I said, okay, actually, I changed my mind. I still want to do it. And then I started booking jobs, and I literally have not stopped working since I was 13, which is when that happened. Got on a series, then got on another series, and got on another series, which was Married with Children. I've been working since I was 13, completely straight without a break.
If you were starting now as an actor.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry to everyone who's starting now as an actor. I mean, you can't do anything. I mean, we got away with everything when I was a young teen. You could do anything, and no one knew about it. There wasn't paparazzi. There wasn't cell phones. There weren't nothing like that. I feel so bad. I feel so bad for this generation.
It just seems so much more difficult, so much more complicated. Even if you weren't being followed by people with their phones, the pressure to constantly share your own story yeah. and make it an interesting story. And the fact that I've heard that directors, or maybe it's more the production side of things, they'll actually make choices about actors based on how many people follow them Instagram.
I know. That's true. I had a friend who's, you know, older like myself, you know, and been in this business a long time, and she said these words to me, and I'm probably paraphrasing. She goes, "Oh yeah, so my agent wants me to get an Instagram, so just to support my brand." And I went, "Did you just speak a different language? I don't even understand what you're talking about, because I don't have an Instagram or anything like that. I have like my Twitter that I have for work, and that's and also to read my news, you know, whatever, all the fake news that I love to read, but." I was like, wait, they're making you like selfie yourself? Like now you have to selfie? And I'm like, oh, I would cry so many tears if someone said to me, you have to do this, because it's just, it's so foreign to me. But that's the pressure that's being put on not only just the young people, but she's in her 40s, man.
Well, how do you think about that? Because this is something, obviously, there's a part of you that loves performing, that loves this craft. And if you were starting out today and someone said to you, the only way you get this, the only way it's possible is if you make this thing, this social media thing, a part of your 24/7 life, what would you say?
I don't know if I could do it. I really don't. I just don't. I don't know if I could do it. It's so outside of my structure. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Like that's, hey man, if you like can take a picture and you look good, to go for it, man. But I'd like troll, like I'm like, I can't, none of that sounds okay to me. But I've always kind of been that way. Like sort of nonconformist, but I guess even way back when they wanted me to like go in on this big studio, like when I first got out of Married with Children, I was like, oh no, I'm just going to do indies. That's all I'm going to do. I'm such a jerk. But I'm like,
because you were too cool.
Like, hey, young kid, you know, you want to make money, you idiot. But no, there was like, that was the feeling. Like I couldn't do it. There was this feeling like I had to just kind of do what felt good to me. But I don't know. I mean, I definitely know that 18-year-old me wouldn't do it. But if I'm like 46 years old, if someone said to me tomorrow, like, oh, for this, your new show, we have to have it. I don't know what I'd do. I just don't know. It would be so awkward.
I think that most people don't love the idea of it. Like most people have some feeling of like shame of like, I really shouldn't be promoting myself this much, but we have to. Yeah. Yeah.
I get its power. I totally get its power. I think it's just, I don't know if I could do like Insta stories of myself talking to myself. Like that would feel, for me, I'd be like, oh, I sound so stupid right now.
If you were starting out today in this industry, what would you say? What advice would you give?
Go back to where you came from. Have other skills. Don't count on have your a great personality to do this, because at the end of the day, if you can't deliver on all levels, craft wise, if you want to call it that, then it's going to be fleeting.
And what are all the levels?
You can't be like, comedy's not my thing. You better find a way to have comedy be part of your repertoire, because there is kind of a crossover. That's what we're getting now. We're not just getting like dramas, and we're not just getting comedies, and we're not just getting action movies. We're getting all of these things that are like an amalgamation of each other now. And you have to kind of have like, you really have to be comfortable with all aspects of it. You know, there was a time when it was like, I'm a dramatic actor and, you know, and I'm a comedian, and there's no line anymore. You really have to kind of be able to cross over, I believe.
Is there, you have to be the dramatic actor and the comedian in the same
film?
You have
to be, and the action, and the action hero all at the same time.
Action hero. What goes into that?
I have no idea. I've never done an action movie.
Would you ever want to?
My back hurts too much. If someone was like, yeah, you need to train for 6 months before this and then get up at 5 a.m. every day to do like, you know, your martial arts, I'd be like, yeah, no.
I look back on your story and you have had such this long and successful career. a decade ago, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. You underwent a double mastectomy. Mm-hmm. Last year, you did more surgery.
I did.
How are you today?
I'm
how
good.
How are you feeling?
I'm good. I mean, I really put off getting the oophorectomy, and I also did my fallopian tubes as well. I took my ovaries and my fallopian tubes out in September. And I've been putting it off for so long, and because I was so scared of how it was going to affect me and everything. And I'm fine. You know, they give me hormones to replace the hormones that are no longer in my body. And I regulated that through after like a week or so of feeling like super menopausal. And then now I'm just fine. Fine.
I would imagine a lot of this was a learning process, though, for you.
You know, there isn't a guidebook, but there's always someone there who's been through it, who will listen to you to talk to you through it. And that's something that I had. Luckily, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2008, my doctor hooked me up with these like four women who I had never met, who were basically anonymous to me. And they were on the phone with me no matter what time of day it was to explain things, to take me through it, to prepare me for it, and to just like let me know that I wasn't alone. And then after I had mine, I've been that for tons of women, sadly, tons mm-hmm. of women over the last 10 years. But I hadn't known anyone who had done the surgery that I had done, except for like one person. And she had kind of a crappy experience with it. But so I was really scared. But then and it was nothing. I mean, I did that preventative. So I didn't have any kind of ovarian cancer or anything. I just was I have BRCA. So the chances of me getting it were pretty high. So and you don't want to mess with that one. That one's not a fun. You don't have a good, usually a good outcome with that. So it was time. For my baby child to have a mama around, I had to do it.
For Sadie.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter Sadie is seven.
She is seven now. So insane.
That is crazy. I remember, I interviewed you a few years ago, mm-hmm, and she was mm-hmm. such a little kid, and now she's...
Now she's cussing me out. So
she really?
Yeah. We had a long talk about that the other day. It's like, okay, this language is not okay by me, but... She used it all in the right context, so I was kind of proud of her at the same time. Like, you know what? I was being an AH. You're very correct, Sadie. Yeah, she's incredible. And you know, this is the time that I feel like I need to be there. And then, so I am there. I'm up with her. I make breakfast. I get her ready for school. I take her to school. I work at her school. Then I go pick her up from school. I take her to her lessons. I take her to her play dates. Everything is done by mommy. So that's my job right now.
Is that what you saw it being, or is that what you've ultimately decided you wanted it to be?
I don't know what I saw as being a parent and what that was going to be. I mean, it changes every day anyway, because they're changing constantly. So you have to change your approach to parenting constantly. Know that you're going to fail constantly, but pick yourself up and look at them and go, okay, they're doing well, so I'm doing a good job too.
What's the toughest lesson you've had to learn along the way?
Oh, gosh.
Hear more from Christina Applegate after a quick word from our sponsor.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's the toughest lesson you've had to learn along the way?
Oh, gosh. The toughest lesson just in life in general?
Yeah.
Of all these 40-something years? It's okay to say no. Spent a lot of years yesing. And it's okay to like self-care, you know?
And why were you saying yes all those years?
People pleaser. Such a people pleaser. Like, oh, no, of course. Don't do that. No, cool. It's totally fine. And now I'm like, yeah, no, I can't. But you would be so, oh, no, I'm sorry. I got to listen to my heart on this one. Got to take care of me.
It is a real energy.
It's okay
sap.
To say yes too.
Sure,
yes is a good vibration.
Well, and if
too.
You
like,
don't say yes,
yes to the day, yes to the things, but also if something doesn't sit right with you, you got to say no. I mean, mm-hmm. I had a job offered to me a year ago, and it was going to be the last summer before she started kindergarten, which to me was like just a big deal to spend it with her. A great, amazing job. Paid better than I've ever been paid in my life. Still in Los Angeles, blah, blah, blah. But it was 5 months and it was all over the summer. Every time they would call me about it, I'd get this like sharp pain in my stomach and in my chest. And I was like, oh, no, that my soul's saying no. It's saying no. Now, it would have been amazing for us financially, for my work, for whatever, for her to see that mommy does this. But I was like, oh, no, my body's saying no. So I said no. And they're like, you're kidding. And I'm like, I got to hang out with her for the summer. It's too important to me.
Do you ever watch whatever project that was?
No. Mm-mm. And I'll never say what it was either.
Oh, I wasn't going to ask you what it was.
Okay.
Don't worry. I won't make you
do that.
Or even try.
No.
My curiosity was because I've talked to a couple of people about saying no versus saying yes. And one of the women who was here talked to me about how she's not an actor, but she talked to me about how there was a job she was offered and her thinking was, what will I think if I see another person doing that job? She ultimately did say yes, but I thought it was an interesting thing because sometimes, you know, I think it's an interesting way of looking at these questions, which can be real challenges at the time, because especially when you're coming up in your career early on, you kind of have to say yes to a lot of things. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah.
If I had said no to a lot of stuff early on, I probably wouldn't
be
here.
I always find like when I either haven't gotten a job or have said no to something that I've always enjoyed whoever had done it and they were like the right person for it. Like the universe just worked out perfectly that like, oh no, that's so much better choice. You know what I mean? So I'm really a big supporter. I'll have to be supporter of the women in your life and then the women that are in your industry and you know, what good goes for someone else is also good for everybody else, you know? So I'm always a big supporter of the women in my industry and kind of like being, you know, a champion for everyone.
And it seems like you've made really distinct choices though, for your life. You've decided, especially when it comes to your social life and what happens outside of work, you've sort of built the life that you want and your life doesn't revolve around your work.
Oh, no, gosh, no. No, 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 no. I'm 24/7 with the people in my like little neighborhood and all these parents like this is we hang out on Friday nights and drink wine and our kids like watch a movie and then, you know, that's the night we let them have pizza, watch a movie, stay up as late as you want. We're going to sit out here and like have our night and we none of us leave our area. It's sad, actually, because and people would be like, can you come down to West Hollywood? And I'm like, ay, caramba, West Hollywood. No, I can't. That's a 20-minute drive. I can't do that. So I'm happy. I'm comfortable. But, you know, I also just like realize like I have to work someday again. I really do. I love it. Do I miss it right now? No, but when I do get like a kind of a taste of like doing something, like I recorded something for someone recently and just being in a room and like laughing and being creative and I was like, oh, this feels so good. It felt so nice. So I'm getting there. I'm getting there. But I'm really looking for what's going to fit what I see mm-hmm. for my life, which is the first 2 years of Sadie's life, I didn't see her. And that, like, always when I talk about it, I want to cry. Because she didn't want me. She wanted nothing to do with me. And I saw her half an hour a day. And that was heartbreaking. So I've made a vow to myself to really inhale this time with her. Because you know what? When she's 11 years old, she's going to be like, don't come near the school. Don't walk me on the schoolyard. I want nothing to do with you, you know? So I get to have her now. Now she's like, Mama, no, you have to walk me in. Hold my hand.
Oh.
Love me.
That's wonderful.
I'm also about to bounce like two checks right now. So I.
Oh.
You know, there's
okay.
There's,
well, it's
there's
time
also
to work,
that.
Mama.
There's also. just looked at my thing. I was like, oh my God, please don't cash that yet. Just give me, let me try to find some money from somewhere to transfer into that account. Cause yeah, that's not good.
Let's talk about sleep.
Talk about it.
You're an insomniac.
Yes, I am. Have been for most of my adult life. And it sucks. But it's so funny. So yeah, I for most of my life I've had like different variations of insomnia. For years it was like I couldn't fall asleep and then I still had to get up early, which is always painful. It's, you know, you're laying there going like, well, okay, if I go to sleep now, I'll get 6 hours. And then an hour later, you're like, well, I mean, it's okay. Like if I go to sleep now, I'll get 5 hours. And then like it turned into like, oh, and then your alarm's going off and you're completely screwed. Now mine is that I can fall asleep really early and then I wake up like 7 times during the night. That's or more. I mean, you could look at like, I have one of those fitness tracker things and you can look on the sleep thing and it's like red line, red line, red line, red line. That's what means how many times you've been awake. But when I teamed up with Merck about 3 years ago for the Why So Awake campaign to really educate people about insomnia, I learned so much that I was doing wrong. And the simplest of adjustments to my lifestyle changed everything for me. It was amazing. Like how many of us like check our phone right before we go to bed or read a tablet? Well, the blue light actually tells the awake part of your brain to be awake. So you're basically drinking a cup of coffee before you go to bed if you're looking at your phone. But there are settings on there that you can change to nighttime settings. And I have mine start at like 6 p.m. and then it comes back on at 7 a.m. So it goes to yellow light from 6 to 7. And that's been so huge. Making it cool in your room because a lot of us want to feel
not
like
too hot.
No, you got to keep it cool, like cool. And if you're cold, put some socks on and put your thing. But to keep coolness, try not to eat too close to bed. Don't drink too close to bed. Keep it dark. Keep the TV off. And then what I've been doing lately, which is something that's been really invaluable, and I kind of came up with it on my own one night, was I woke up. I had been asleep for a couple hours, and I woke up at midnight. And I was about to just like turn on the television and like watch CNN or ABC. Of course.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, ABC. And I was like, no. And then I just went, I forgive you. I forgive you for being awake. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay that you're up. Not a big deal. I forgive you. And as I just got really peaceful with the whole idea of it, I fell back asleep again.
What's the worst advice you've received in your career?
Bigger the eyebrow, the better. Maybe. I don't know if it was ever advice, but that
was
something,
in the makeup chair?
That was something that just happened. I don't know. You know what? I can't think of any bad advice because I have a tendency to not like pay attention when people are talking to me.
Well, it's an interesting point because
just
you
kidding,
do.
I'm kidding.
No, I'm not. I don't think you're totally shutting everybody out, but it is an interesting point because there are a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily be comfortable making some of the choices that you've made. Where inside of you does it come from for you to know so clearly that these are trade-offs that I am not willing to make, even though there might be upside for some people?
I don't know. I think I never sought this out. So what I mean by that, because that sounds snotty. It sounds like, oh, I didn't have to do anything and then I became successful. No, I just was in this from such a young age and it just never stopped. It just was like, it was a continuum, you know? So it was just what we had to do. My mom I had to work. We had no money, you know? So it was kind of like, I have to do this and she's has to do this. Otherwise we're going to be evicted from our house or we're not going to have any food. So this was my job. This was my life. It was my lifestyle. The success part of it literally came out of left field. So, and that didn't even hit anything because you know what? We were on Married with Children and we were like the black sheep of that network and we were not ever treated like we were something special over there. You know, they had the 21 Jump Streets and they had everybody else that they were like fawning over. And we literally were left alone to like, no one, you know, like, There wasn't like a big cake. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There probably was a cake at some point, but I mean, metaphorically, it really wasn't like that. And so we never even realized the impact that we were having out there. So that's kind of why I think I feel this way. It's just sort of just kept kind of going, and I worked really hard. I'm not going to say that. I mean, I auditioned for everything that I ended up getting. You know, I worked hard to get those things.
How many auditions do you think you've been on in your life?
Oh, my God, so many. I just went on an audition recently, which I was the first one in probably 12, 13 years. So that was super frightening. And it was like 16 pages of dialogue. And my agents were like, well, you don't have to audition for this. And I was like, no, well, I want to. I would love this job. This is a perfect job for me. And I haven't done this in so long. Well, like, what a great challenge for me to be able to like, see if I can do it again, you know, and am I going to freak out? Am I going to be scared? Am I going to pass out? Like, how am I going to feel? And like, that's exciting too. Like, let's see what happens in the room. And I'm not attached to the outcome of it. Like whether I get it or not is not going to change like the course of my life today, but let's just see what happens. And it went really well and I did not get the job, but that's okay. I was sad about that one because I was like, oh, it's such a perfect job. It's like ensemble, work just a couple days a week. Mommy gets to take her kid to soccer. So, but oh well.
The next one.
It's all fine. Something will come along.
What goes into preparing for 16 pages of dialogue?
Oh, a lot of thinking. And because I don't like to read off the page, a lot of
memorizing,
which I hadn't memorized anything
memorizing.
In so long. I was always pretty good at it, but then as it's a muscle too, so you get out of your muscle atrophies. So I was having a really hard time, and then like the character had like this one big long full page speech, and I looked at it and I was like, oh my God. And then I said, don't get intimidated, just one thing at a time. One little thing at a time, one thought at a time. If you know what it is that you're trying to say, if you know what it is that you're trying to convey, the words will come. The words will be there. And so I just worked on that. And then I couldn't, I was like, I didn't look at the page. I was like, oh my God, that happened. You still can do this. But you still didn't get it. So there it is. Okay.
I think you need to keep going.
It's all good.
I know. I totally feel you on that. And I look forward to watching you in whatever the next thing
It'll
is.
It'll be something soon.
And Sadie is a very lucky girl. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, it's the end of the interview, which means it's time for our No Limits Entrepreneur of the Week, where we feature one of you, our amazing listeners, who is building something of your own. And this week's No Limits Entrepreneur is Susie Welsh. She's the CEO and founder of Binto. It's a women's health company that provides women with a monthly subscription box of personally curated health products. Doesn't that sound good? Healthier without thinking about it? They do the thinking for you and send it to you? So on their website, they ask you a series of questions to figure out what kind of supplements, vitamins, or probiotics would be best for you. And then they provide you with one-on-one support from health professionals. Susie caught our eye because she created her company to help cut through a lot of the junk science that consumers are faced with day to day when it comes to health. And Susie, I have to say, I love that because I spend so much of my time cutting through the junk science when it comes to the economy and business and technology. There's so much misinformation out there, and I love that you are attacking that with a business that makes sense. You know, my favorite word is charlatans, because I despise charlatans, and there are so many of them. And Susie, well, she wanted to help with women's health and cut out the charlatans. So she came up with this idea while she was working as a nurse. She noticed a hole in the market where her patients were constantly asking advice about which supplements or vitamins they should be taking. Here she is to tell you the story.
Hi, everyone. My name is Susie Welsh. I'm the founder and CEO of Binto. Binto is a digitally native women's health company, and we get women access to real healthcare providers and over-the-counter products on a digital platform. I launched Binto after working for many years as a women's health nurse and noticing that women didn't have a place to turn to for health advice, a professional, or get their products. So we support you from your period years all the way through menopause. All of our products come here in these grab-and-go day packs, and they're personalized to match your exact needs. You can find us online at mybinto.com, and you can also join the conversation and follow along on @mybinto at Instagram.
Such a smart business. So congratulations, Susie. I wish you and Binto continued success. And remember, you can head on over to my Instagram at Rebecca Jarvis to hear more of Susie and Binto's story. Don't forget, if you or someone you know should be featured here on No Limits as the Entrepreneur of the Week, send those nominations to me. Or you can send career questions to me as well. You can send it all to nolimitswithrjpodcast@gmail.com. I know how busy we all are. I really appreciate it when all of you take the time to write. I also want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to those of you who have been leaving us reviews, like Anna S922, who writes, "There's something to take away from RJ's No Limits podcast, which I look forward to listening to all the time. Life lessons, business advice, inspiration, or just an interesting story. RJ asked the questions that we all want answered. Really enjoy this podcast. I will continue listening and spreading the word. Thanks, Rebecca and team." Well, thank you so much, Anna S922. We really appreciate you spreading the word. I am so happy you're getting the most out of this podcast. And to those of you who have been writing me similar messages, thank you to you too. It is such a great feeling when I know that we're reaching you and when we're having conversations that are important to your lives and making things better in that life. Finally, a shout out to my team here that helps make this happen week after week. Taylor Dunn, editor Michelle Bancardo, research assistant Annie Osakwe, and the ABC radio team, David Rind, Elizabeth Russo, Josh Cohan, Andrew Kelp, and Steve Jones.